Topic number two. When World War I broke out 68 years ago, world opinion was far from unanimous about who was right and who was wrong in the conflict. Many people felt that Austria-Hungary had put up long enough with harassment by the Serbs. After Archduke Franz Ferdinand was assassinated by a Serb in Sarajevo on June 28, 1914, Austria-Hungary declared war on Serbia, and many people applauded. Austria-Hungary had been given a blank check by Germany to smash the Serbs. People started having second thoughts when they saw the dispute mushrooming, sucking in nation after nation. Even so, world opinion continued to maintain a great deal of goodwill toward Germany and her allies. That is, until the Battle of Louvain, Belgium. Up until the war, Louvain had been a beautiful, peaceful town. But Louvain had the misfortune to be caught in the middle between the armies of the Kaiser and those of the Allies. The Germans won the battle by virtually leveling Louvain. The battle took a gruesome toll among the helpless residents of Louvain. On all sides, Louvain lay in ruins. Once beautiful buildings had been reduced to piles of rubble. The rubble had become a tomb for countless civilians who had died inside. The debris-choked streets were a mournful scene of the maimed, the bereaved, and the confused. When news about the fate of Louvain reached the outside world, a wave of revulsion swept around the world. Many who had originally sympathized with the Kaiser's policies were repelled by such extreme military tactics. In terms of public opinion, Louvain was the turning point of World War I. It blackened the image of Germany in a way that could never be undone. My friends, Beirut could well be the counterpart of Louvain for Israel and her powerful backer, the United States. Today, as in 1914, the country that ostensibly started the war benefited at first by a large reservoir of goodwill in the world. But just as Louvain soured public opinion in World War I, Beirut has shocked the world in 1982. The merciless brutality and senseless killings by the Israelis in Lebanon has been symbolized by the siege of Beirut. Israel has been rightly condemned the world over for its actions in Lebanon. And if the full extent of the agony of Lebanon ever becomes generally known, Israel's image will never recover from the shame. When Austria-Hungary declared war on Serbia in 1914, it set off a chain reaction that snowballed into war among the great powers of that day. Likewise, the Israeli invasion of Lebanon to wipe out the PLO has been calculated to help set off a chain reaction leading to nuclear war I. The joint strategy of the American Bolsheviks and the Israeli Zionists is a replay of the maneuvering that set off World War I. I've given details about that in past reports, especially in audio letters number 63, 66, and 69. If need be, the Bolsheviks and Zionists, that is, the Reagan-Begin axis, are prepared to keep multiplying crises until America's nuclear first strike succeeds. In the Middle East, the de facto move of PLO headquarters to Syria is setting the stage for a direct confrontation soon between Israel and Syria. That will create the most dangerous proxy battle yet between client states of Russia and the United States. Already, Israeli forces are preparing to try to drive out the legally present Syrians from Lebanon's Bekaa Valley. At the same time, Israeli forces are not withdrawing as the PLO evacuates from West Beirut. Instead, they are heading north. Israeli armored units are already on the outskirts of Tripoli, just 20 miles short of Lebanon's northern border. As for Israel's solemn promises to turn back Lebanon to the Lebanese, nothing could be a more transparent lie. Thanks to the war, the southern third of Lebanon, including the Litani River, has now been absorbed into the so-called Free Lebanon Zone, controlled by Major Haddad. Haddad is nothing but an Israeli agent, a Shabazz Goy, doing the dirty work of the Begin government. When and if the Israelis formally withdraw from Lebanon, they will still continue to control Haddad's area, including Sidon and Tyre. And now, another Israeli puppet, Mr. Bassir Gemel, has emerged from the war rubble as the president-elect of Lebanon. He is nothing more than another Sadat, and he, too, will meet the same fate as Sadat when Israel is ready. Looking around the world, my friends, the amount of trouble now being stirred up by the Bolsheviks and Zionists is almost beyond description. For example, Bolshevik agents in Poland are stirring up new trouble to ruin government efforts to relax martial law. That keeps the Warsaw regime on the defensive, unable to appear as anything but a bad guy. Or consider Central America and the Caribbean. Panama is now being destabilized, beginning with the recent surprise resignation, so-called, of Panama's president. The plan to create an apparent threat to the Panama Canal is moving right along. Meanwhile, Congress has recently passed a special Tonkin Gulf-type resolution aimed at Cuba. It frees Reagan's hands to take military action against Cuba, just as the Tonkin Gulf resolution freed President Johnson to widen the war in Vietnam. And then there is Asia, where war between India and Pakistan is targeted for around November 1982. Middle East intrigues and many more worldwide are in the works as a result of the Bolshevik program to balkanize the world. But all those intrigues will no longer be necessary if the Project Z shortcut war plan succeeds. Very soon, they plan to set off nuclear World War I as a total surprise, and they intend to make it look like a gigantic accident. In Audio Letter 73 5 months ago, I outlined the overall war plan of Project Z. But as a practical matter, the most important thing you need to know now is how the war is being planned to begin. You need to know what warning signs to watch for and when. For that reason, I will now describe in detail how the Pentagon war planners intend to set off the war. Only a few hints of what is about to happen will be visible in public, but if you see them happening, you will know what they mean. The plan for an American nuclear first strike against Russia has been in gestation for over 4 years now. I first reported on America's secret shift toward a first-strike nuclear strategy in Audio Letters 36 and 37. The prime objective of the initial American nuclear strike is still as I first made public in Audio Letter 37. The objective is to knock out all of Russia's complex of space bases. Those are the logistic lifeline, the Achilles heel of the Russian space triad of strategic weapons. If the Bolsheviks here can put Russia's space triad out of action, Russia will no longer be unconquerable in nuclear war. And so, the initial attack against Russia's space triad bases is to be followed immediately by an all-out American nuclear attack. Bolshevik war planners here, the hardliners, have been putting together the pieces of the military machine needed to do the job for years now. I have reported on these various pieces of the overall military picture over the course of many past reports. Now all the factors in the Bolshevik military equation are coming together as they prepare for imminent nuclear war. In Audio Letter 73, I describe the new secret American superweapon that is the key to the attack plan. It is the Phantom Warplane, the most radical breakthrough achieved by the so-called stealth program. Unmanned Phantom Warplanes are being deployed now to their attack bases in northern Norway, eastern Turkey, and Xinjiang Province, China. These bases are protected from cosmosphere attack by high-power lasers. The lasers are equipped with a new super-sensitive aiming device known as SEIR, C-E-I-R, for computer-enhanced infrared. As I reported in Audio Letter 72, a SEIR-equipped laser shot down a Russian cosmosphere over New Jersey some 7 months ago. Its effectiveness is therefore a proven fact. But just to make sure the Russians have not developed a defense against these special lasers, another cosmosphere was blasted out of the sky over the New York City vicinity just 3 days ago. It created a huge high-speed fireball, described in the New York Times yesterday as a possible asteroid burning up. When the American Phantom warplanes are launched into Russia on Z-Day, they will be swarming toward only 6 primary and about a dozen secondary targets. The 6 primary targets are the Russian space bases. 4 of these are the rocket bases known as Cosmodrones at Baikonur, Tyuratam, Plesetsk, and Kapustin Yar. The other 2 space bases are the sprawling Cosmosphere facilities at Semipalatinsk and Novosibirsk. As for the dozen or so secondary targets, these are the complex of Russian flying ABM bases. The system consists of anti-missile particle beam weapons carried aboard converted Tu-144 supersonic transports. The transports were mysteriously removed from service in June 1978 for conversion to anti-missile defense. I reported that this was underway in audio letter 54. Today, the system is fully operational. The Bolshevik war planners here in the United States want to knock them all out, if possible, to make the American follow-up attack more devastating. Of all these targets, the two which have become most important of all are the two Cosmosphere bases. The new Russian Super Heavy Cosmospheres, which I first reported on in audio letter 64, foreshadow the day when rockets will be obsolete. If the Cosmosphere bases survive, the Bolshevik war plan is doomed to failure. There is only one satisfactory geographic location from which to launch a strike against the Russian Cosmosphere areas. As long ago as audio letter 37, I revealed that this key location is Sinkiang Province, China. The Bolsheviks here must have access to Sinkiang Province at all costs. That is why, 4 months after I revealed this, the so-called Carter administration unexpectedly dumped Taiwan on December 15, 1978. That day, Washington suddenly announced full diplomatic relations with Peking. With nuclear war one approaching fast, the Red Chinese once again used their leverage this month against Taiwan. Peking has been pressuring the Reagan administration to publicly commit itself to cutting off all arms sales to Taiwan. As recently as August 13, Reagan's alleged final offer was a refusal to do that. But then the Red Chinese told Washington that if the United States did not agree, the Chinese would shut down the American stealth base in Sinkiang Province. 4 days later, on August 17, a joint communique was released in Peking and Washington. It declared that there is only one China, that Taiwan is part of it, and that the United States will gradually discontinue arms sales to Taiwan. The old Reagan campaign pledge to stand by Taiwan was scrapped in order to prevent a last-minute hitch in the stealth attack plan. According to the Pentagon plan, the unmanned Phantom warplanes will take off from their various bases at carefully predetermined intervals. Their launch times will be adjusted in order to make them all arrive at their targets simultaneously. As I detail in audio letter 73, these robot bombers will be flying blind on a one-way trip like mechanical kamikaze planes. But thanks to their advanced new type inertial guidance systems, they're expected to all arrive right on schedule. As they fly through Russian airspace, they will be invulnerable to detection either visually or by radar. The light-distorting electromagnetic fields, which I described in audio letter 73, will also render Russian beam weapons useless for defense. Anti-aircraft missiles, even those which follow the heat trail of a plane, will also be useless. If any missile or jet fighter got close to a Phantom warplane, its electronics would be hopelessly deranged by the invisibility field. As if all this were not enough, each Phantom warplane will also be following a pre-programmed zigzag course into Russia. The Bolsheviks here believe that this will make any attempt to fire at the stealth planes with anti-aircraft guns very ineffective. All things considered, the Project Z war planners are confident that enough Phantom warplanes will reach their targets to do their job. Converging from all directions, the invisible robot warplanes will all arrive at their targets at essentially the same time. Countdown clocks in all the warplanes will be programmed to reach zero at the same instant. When they do, a 24-megaton hydrogen bomb will explode aboard each and every Phantom warplane. The attack is planned for nighttime, when the Soviet Union is asleep. Around the Space Triad bases and Tu-144 bases, night will turn into day as man-made stars erupt into life. That will be the moment which an American satellite parked high over the Indian Ocean has been watching for. It is the attack confirmation sensor, which I described in audio letter 75. This was the mysterious military payload of Space Shuttle 4, placed in geostationary orbit by an auxiliary rocket. When the H-bombs detonate over their targets, the Air Force satellite will detect the flashes of infrared, ultraviolet, and X radiation. Instantly, the satellite will flash a signal confirming the attack to listening stations on Earth. The attack confirmation signal will confirm that the initial critical surprise attack by stealth planes has succeeded. That will be the signal for all the rest of the Project C nuclear war plan to go into motion. But as I reported in Audio Letter 73, Project Z is a super-secret war plan, unknown to all but a few top leaders of the military in America. Therefore, the attack confirmation signal will not be routed through standard existing channels. Instead, the Bolshevik war planners here have created a special new command for the purpose. It's called the Air Force Space Command. It is to begin operations officially on September 1, just in time to get ready for the planned nuclear attack on September 17. The new Space Command is located in Colorado Springs, Colorado. There it will feed special information to NORAD headquarters, also located there. When the Air Force Space Command receives the attack confirmation signal from the Indian Ocean satellite, the follow-up attack will begin. First, a coded signal will be flashed to the Minuteman TX commanders in our northern tier of states and certain other locations. The Minuteman TX is America's real mobile missile, now fully deployed on our railroads, as I first revealed in Audio Letter 55. In Audio Letter 60, I reported that they are also accompanied by high-speed missiles called ACMs. When the coded signal arrives from the newly created Space Command, the ACMs will zoom upward to the fringes of the atmosphere. There, they will detonate special cobalt ionization bombs. The resulting electron storm in the upper atmosphere of the United States is expected to temporarily disable any cosmospheres on patrol. With the cosmospheres momentarily deranged, the mobile Minuteman TX missiles will be launched right past them at Russia. When the American ACMs detonate their bombs high over our own country, it will also create another effect. It is called electromagnetic pulse, or EMP. EMP can knock out communications, fry telephone lines, and cause power blackouts by overloading power transmission lines. In Audio Letter 66, I described how the Bolsheviks here plan to use this effect to trigger an all-out American nuclear strike against Russia. They have been programmed to consider an EMP episode to be evidence in itself that America is under nuclear attack. America's entire nuclear triad, missiles, bombers, and submarines, will then launch a supposed retaliatory strike against Russia. There will be no need for a normal White House order to attack. There has been no official admission that this is in store for us, of course. Even so, this reprogramming of our nuclear forces is now being hinted at by discussion of a new military doctrine. It's called Launch Under Attack. Military analysts describe it as warning by loss of warning. That is exactly the concept I made public over a year ago in Audio Letter 66. My friends, if all goes according to plan, there will be no warning to the American public by Reagan administration officials. They are counting on surprise to make their nuclear surprise attack on Russia successful. They aren't about to throw that surprise away by telling you about it first. So it will be up to you to watch events for yourself and to make your best judgment based on what you know. I've already mentioned some of the visible signs that the plan is still on track up to now. There remain two more major signals to watch for in the days ahead. If you see them, you'll know that the American nuclear first strike against Russia is about to be attempted. First, watch for news of a major nuclear false alarm sometime during the first half of September. This will mean a full-scale dry run has been carried out involving the brand new Air Force Space Command. By describing the exercise afterward as a false nuclear alert, the war planners will be setting the stage for an alleged accidental war. The final warning will come as the nuclear attack itself is beginning. My friends, the present Pentagon schedule calls for the preliminary Phantom warplane H-bombs to explode at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Friday, September 17, 1982. At that time, virtually all of Russia will be in darkness. When the Indian Ocean satellite signal arrives confirming the attack, It will be followed within a minute or so by the EMP episode I described. If you're watching TV or listening to the radio, there will suddenly be horrendous static and possibly permanent damage to your receiver. There may also be a power blackout. Your telephone may go dead. If those things happen, my friends, don't wait for any air raid sirens. What's happening is that the American follow-up nuclear strike against Russia is being launched. Retaliating missiles from Russia can be expected here soon afterward. If you are in a prime coastal target area, the Russian counterstrike will hit your area within minutes. The Russian short-range underwater launch missiles, which were planted along our shores and the Great Lakes in 1976 and 1977, are still there. Their short flight time, unfortunately, will leave at most a few minutes to take cover after the EMP episode. ICBMs fired from Russia will take approximately 24 minutes to reach targets near the Canadian border. If you live farther south, it will take several more minutes. But if your area happens to be targeted by a Russian submarine-launched missile, the time could be cut to less than 10 minutes in many cases. Russia's moon bases and cosmospheres overhead, both armed with their charged particle beam weapons, can still do great damage to major cities and United States military installations, but these cause no fallout. Topic number 3. My friends, if the events I have described take place, it will mean that the Bolshevik war planners in the Pentagon are going ahead with their attack plan. But that does not mean that it will necessarily succeed. As I say these words, there is preliminary intelligence that the Russians may have a surprise up their sleeve for the Bolsheviks. This is actually the second attempt by the Bolsheviks here to set off nuclear war one, as my older listeners know. The first attempt in late January 1980 was a disastrous failure. It led indirectly to leaks about the stealth program about 6 months later. Now they are trying again with better weapons. But in the meantime, Russian weaponry has also kept on advancing. As a result, there's no way to predict how the Bolshevik-triggered American first strike will turn out. Last month, I reported that the super spy satellite launched by the Third Space Shuttle in March had detected something puzzling in Russia. The puzzle consists of large numbers of small domed installations arranged in rings around strategic Russian targets. There is a ring of these domes around each cosmodrome and around each cosmosphere base in particular, but opinion is divided as to what they are. Some analysts believe they are more or less conventional anti-aircraft batteries with domed enclosures. Others think they are missile batteries. Still others vote for beamed weapons of some kind, either lasers or particle beams. The only agreement up to now is that they are defensive weapons of some kind. That is indicated by their arrangement in protective rings around certain strategic targets. There is one other guess as to what the domes are. It is a minority opinion so far, which is not accepted by the top American Bolshevik war planners. But my own information indicates that it is the right guess. Each dome, my friends, contains a weapon known as a rail gun. Rail guns have been under study for a number of years in both Russia and the United States. A rail gun is a kind of super high-speed cannon. The projectile moves down a track between a pair of long conducting rails. When the gun is fired, an incredibly powerful electromagnetic field races down the length of the rails, welding them together as it goes. The projectile is forced along ahead of the fast-moving electromagnetic field, leaving the muzzle with incredible velocity. Railgun muzzle velocities of at least 25,000 feet per second have been achieved. This is faster than the space shuttle in Earth orbit. Here in the United States, railguns are still curiosities. A railgun can only be fired once because the rails weld themselves together, and the projectile has to be non-conducting. It can't be steel or other metal. But to the Russians, faced with a phantom warplane threat, railguns may be the only answer. The Russians have the ability to aim railguns at our phantom warplanes using psychoenergetic range finding, which I revealed in audio letter 42. And a non-conducting projectile fired at astronomical velocities could penetrate the stealth plane's invisibility field. The use of rail guns to defend against the Phantom warplanes will be a nasty surprise to the Bolsheviks here if they carry out their war plan. But as of now, the war plan is still on track. As a result, time may well be running out for the United States of America as we know it. Now it's time for my last-minute summary. My friends, in this audio letter, I've tried to prepare you as fully as possible to recognize the signs of imminent nuclear war. The anti-war coup d'etat plan of General Alexander Haig, which I revealed in audio letter 72, collapsed with his forced resignation in June. Since that time, it has been full speed ahead toward nuclear war one. The rush-rush new war timetable, which I also revealed 6 months ago in audio letter 72, is still on schedule. Target date, September 17, 1982. Just 12 days ago, on August 15, the Los Angeles Times broke a bombshell story about these war plans. The syndicated article revealed that an elaborate, secret, new, protracted nuclear war plan is now ready. In fact, my friends, this plan is already operational. The article says, quote, "According to a member of the administration, the plan would contemplate nuclear warfare for as long as 6 months," unquote. The plan also draws attention to the present vulnerability of our military command, control, and communications system. The article quotes a Reagan staffer in the words, "The system might survive 15 minutes of nuclear war," unquote. My friends, this very vulnerability is the key to the Bolshevik plan to set off the war by EMP episode I have described. The fear over all this is so great that 3 days ago, the Pentagon announced extreme measures to try to squelch the debate. Our Bolshevik Defense Secretary, Caspar Weinberger, has sent out 70 letters to key newspaper editors here and abroad to try to defuse the criticism. Meanwhile, the plan to set off nuclear war soon is still on track. In the past, I have reported that Russia's new anti-Bolshevik rulers regard America as Babylon, wallowing in ill-gotten wealth and degeneracy. If the American Bolsheviks are successful in forcing nuclear war upon the Kremlin, the fall of Babylon may well be at hand. As the angel of Revelation revealed to John the Apostle, the cries may soon ring out around the world, "Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come." Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.